Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Let's follow up on yesterday's Supreme Court ruling that struck down two of President Obama's recess appointments to the National Labor Relations Board and preview the decision coming Monday that could be a dagger in the heart of public sector unions. Now, we talked yesterday about the recess appointment ruling, and I think this has been most of the media that's out there in terms of how much power a president has to get his nominees into office. Today, let's look at the implications of undoing the work of these specific appointees who have helped make more than 100 NLRB labor rulings, like you may complain about working conditions on social media sites. You may not be fired for criticizing the company in email between company employees. That was about Costco. A company cannot order an employee not to discuss a company investigation into the employee, cannot order that employee not to discuss the investigation with other coworkers. And the ruling that made it to the Supreme Court itself had to do with a Pepsi-related bottling company called Noel Canning. So we will get to that as well. Let's talk to Stephen Greenhouse, New York Times labor and workplace correspondent and author of the book, The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. Thanks a lot for coming back on WNYC, Stephen. Hi.
Always nice to be here, Brian.
And we'll get to Monday's anticipated union-related ruling, too. But let's talk about some of these. Let's just go down some of these that may need to be revisited now. A company cannot order an employee not to discuss a company investigation into that employee with other coworkers. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes. So just a little background. So during the 18 months from January 2012 to July 2013, when the Labor Board supposedly had these three illegal recess appointees, the Labor Board issued 436 decisions. 100 of them are on appeal because the folks who lost their decision said, they should not be enforced because the board had illegal appointees. So now 100 of these cases are probably going to be relitigated, sent back to the labor board to be reviewed, reconsidered, probably confirmed. So this case, under the National Labor Relations Act, which was enacted under President Roosevelt, all workers have the right to band together for mutual support. And generally, federal courts and the labor board have said that means that, if you're treated poorly at work, if you're being punished at work, you have the right to talk to, the person who sits next to you, to your union representative, to seek support, to discuss problems, to figure out how to help resolve that. Mm-hmm. So that if you're punished and you want to speak, and you want to bring in a coworker or speak to a coworker, for help, the labor board generally says you're allowed to do that, and it ruled to that effect. And now,
now they're going to have to go and look at it again. But a number of these things seem to have to do with employee speech. The ones that I've seen written up in various media today is having to be revisited because of the Supreme Court ruling. You may complain about working conditions on social media sites. You may not be fired for criticizing the company in email between company employees. That was about Costco. So has that been a big running thread in the National Labor Relations Board under President Obama, the whole larger question of employee free speech about the company without fear of retribution?
Yes. So with the rise of social media and Facebook and Twitter, there's been a bunch of cases where employers, have fired people for telling a coworker, my boss sucks. And the employees will say, in that case, I've been fired illegally. We were discussing together problems we have on the job. Our boss is a bully. Our boss makes us work too many hours. And the employees and sometimes unions will say, workers have the right to have those discussions, and it's illegal for employers to bar that type of discussion, whether face-to-face or in the lunchroom or on Facebook or on Twitter. And some employers have fired people for doing that, and the labor board has stepped in and said to the companies, that's illegal. You know, workers have the right to band together for mutual support, whether, you know, writing letters to each other or holding meetings together or on Facebook, you know, discussing these matters.
So, listeners, want to weigh in on any of these? Should you be able to criticize your employer on social media to the outside world without the risk of getting fired? 212-433-WNYC. Should it depend on what you say or how far you go? How about the Banner Health Systems case, which was one that I guess gets thrown out here, regarding not social media to the outside world, but what employees could say to each other if one of them was under investigation that we were just discussing? 212-433-WNYC. Anybody have any anecdotes about this in your own workplace? 212-433-9692 for Stephen Greenhouse, labor issues correspondent for The New York Times, in light of this ruling from the Supreme Court yesterday. The ruling that actually made it to the court itself, or I should say the labor relations issue that made it to the court itself, had to do with a Pepsi-related bottling company called Noel Canning. Explain that. What NLRB ruling were they trying to get out of?
So the labor board ruled that Noel Canning was improperly refusing, was not bargaining in good faith with the union, and had basically, and this often happens in labor negotiations, where the labor board will say the employer is dragging its feet, it doesn't want to reach an agreement, it's trying to weaken the union, it's trying to prevent any union contract, and it's somewhat subjective to really determine, well, is a company bargaining in, you know, good enough faith to maintain a contract, is to totally digging in and not bargaining and trying to drag out things for a year or two to prevent any future contract and to undermine the union. And at those times, the labor board will sometimes step in and said, you're really bargaining in bad faith. And that's what happened with Noel Canning. If I may add one other thing to be clear about something I said before. Regarding the use of social media and criticizing your company, if you just go alone onto Facebook and Twitter and say, my boss sucks, we want to get rid of him, that just, you know, crying out on your own without discussing it with other coworkers, that's not considered protected because it's not a mutual, it's not working for mutual support to help each other. But if you say things like that in a general conversation with 3, 4, 5 workers on Facebook and discussing problems.
Oh, so that context really matters constitutionally.
Yeah.
And listeners, this is WNYC FM HD in AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. And Jason in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my question.
Sure. What is it?
Yeah, my basic question is if your person you're interviewing could kind of explain the basic legal argument that you're allowed free speech in public life. It's a fundamental right, but you're not allowed it in your, you know, private life or your professional life.
Right. It's a good question because a corporation is not a democracy. A workplace is not a democracy. The Constitution doesn't require that it be. So what does the constitutional right to free speech that's provided by the government really guarantee you with respect to the private sector?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I'm often asked that.
You know, speech.
Sorry. We had a little feedback. That was our problem. Go ahead, Stephen. I think we fixed it.
So, you know, the United States Constitution only protects against the government, you know, the federal government, state governments, municipal governments cracking down on your free speech. The Constitution really doesn't control what, you know, private actors like corporations and society do. So, you know, corporations, so if, you know, if you tell your boss, screw you, I don't like you, you know, he or she might fire you right then and there for insubordination, and you're not going to be protected by the Constitution and probably, you know, no particular law for that. You know, the National Labor Relations Act was passed in 19, 35, to, you know, give American workers, you know, a federally guaranteed right to form unions. And part of that law says, you know, workers have the right to speak together, to band together, to lift their wages, to improve their working conditions. And that gives you a right to talk about certain things. And that means you could criticize your boss for being too much of a bully, for making you work ridiculous hours, for not paying you properly. So, you know, so the government generally, allows, doesn't control private speech, doesn't protect private speech, at your home or at a company, except in this one context where workers are banding together to try to improve their lot, mm-hmm. their lives, their working conditions. I hope that's clear.
I think that's very clear because Congress passed that law. So are all these rulings now null and void because the NLRB appointees who made them were found to have been illegally appointed by the president? And assuming that's the case, can the president simply appoint equally pro-labor NLRB members through legal means to reaffirm all these same decisions? Or can the Republicans in the Senate use this ruling to block a quorum on the NLRB and give the employers all these reversals?
So, Brian, so there were these 436 decisions issued during these 18 months when there were these, you know, illegal recess appointees. You know, about all but 100 of them have been resolved. But the 100 that are on appeal will, you know, the employer, you know, the people who appealed them, mostly employers, you know, might ask that they be sent back to the labor board for the labor board to reconsider, to review. Now, the labor board has its full contingent of five members right now. They were confirmed by the Senate last summer. The three, you know, so-called illegal appointees are no longer on the board, and they were regular appointees. And there's a 3-2 Democratic majority, just as there's a Democratic majority during the time of the so-called illegal recess appointments.
So they already have the staff and the appointees already approved by the Senate to go back and revisit all these legally and basically affirm all the same decisions.
Basically,
it's not like the Senate minority can now start filibustering in this area and stop all these things?
No. I mean, now if the board, the majority of the board, the Democratic majority of the board, I think it's very likely to confirm, mm-hmm. The 100 decisions, almost all the 100 decisions that have been appealed.
Right.
I think many employers are going to say it's not even worth, you know, spending another $10,000, $20,000 on litigation to have it sent back to the board because the board's probably just going to confirm it anyway. I should just drop it. But I think some employers might think, well, we want to drag this out another year or two, so let's go back and appeal it because that way we might fend off the union in some way, shape, or form for another year or two.
And the NLRB almost never makes news. Now, as a result of the Supreme Court case, we had a nice excuse to talk about some of the things they've been doing on behalf of workers. So before you go, Monday, the Supreme Court will come down with its final two decisions, and they both have to do with workplace issues, really. One is Hobby Lobby. Can the Obamacare law require private employers, regardless of their personal religious views, to cover contraception as part of the required health care policy minimums? That's one. And the other one is Harris, which Mother Jones describes today as a blockbuster case that could, in a worst-case scenario, wipe public employee unions such as SEIU and AFSCME off the map. That's how Mother Jones puts it. How would you put it?
I think Mother Jones overstates the case, but I think if Harris versus Quinn comes out in a way strongly against unions, it could greatly weaken public sector unions. The case involves whether a state and public sector unions, say representing home care workers or teachers, can they require workers, who are represented by the union but opt out not to join the union, you know, can they still nonetheless be required to pay representation fees to the union? And if the court rules that it's illegal for states and unions to require that for public sector employees, then it's possible that, say, half the, you know, say 100,000 workers in a public sector union or 70% of the workers in a public sector union might stop paying, you know, representation fees, union dues altogether. And I think as many people know here in New York and many other states, public sector unions are, you know, very powerful politically. They have big campaign war chests. And if all of a sudden that campaign war chest becomes much smaller, you know, if you know, unions, you know, have much less money to spend you know, representing the workers on campaign stuff, that will, you know, weaken in many ways the Democratic Party, weaken progressive candidates, weaken pro-labor candidates. And that's why many people think this is a, you know, very important case if it comes out against public sector unions. It's possible this, you know, the Supreme Court will just affirm the status quo and not change things very much. But usually the decisions that come out on the last day of the session, and next Monday is the last day of the session, usually those decisions are blockbuster decisions. So I think, you know, union leaders are really, really worried about what's going to happen on Monday.
And they will be releasing that Monday at 10 a.m., and so we will be talking about it on Monday morning show, regardless of how it comes down. And Stephen Greenhouse, New York Times, labor and workplace correspondent and author of The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker, thanks so much.
Thanks. Always nice to be here, Brian.